All right, so we're going to jump right in, and I'll try to come back and make a few introductory thoughts and things as we try to jump into thinking about the book of Acts. But let's do this little exercise to begin with. And this is a way of maybe testing you out, see what the class knows or not. And then later on we'll come back, and we might even try to go through 28 chapters, see if we can come up with something for each one of those chapters to the book of Acts. But I picked some that I think have some of the more memorable events that happen here. So help me out. What do you see? What do you know happened in Acts chapter 2? Go ahead, Aaron.
This is the day of Pentecost, and the Holy Spirit descends on the apostles, and Peter preaches.
Okay. So that's really kind of three things to pull out of that, right? It's the day of Pentecost. There's a specific time period. It would have been a Sunday. Pentecost would be 50 days after the Passover, the end of that, which would have been on a Sabbath day, a Saturday. You can do the math. And so this is another feast day. The time has come. Holy Spirit falls on the apostles, you said, and then Peter preaches. What else? Any other facts kind of out of that chapter that come to mind that maybe you can remember, or you're even welcome to guess about? Any content of the lesson, or anything that happens at the end, or anything else that you can think of in chapter 2?
The 3,000 souls.
Yeah, there's a response to the sermon that's pretty dramatic. And so we'll look at that. And then there's some follow-up things. Okay, so that's chapter 2. What about chapter 6? What stands out to you in chapter 6?
The appointment of the seven to help them.
Yeah, and I noticed you didn't say what the seven were. We don't exactly know. They sound a lot like deacons in some ways. Sometimes we use strange words like proto-deacons. You know, something that was similar to, but that they were asked to look out among themselves, select these seven men. Their qualifications were primarily their character. But what was that all about? Why were they looking out and appointing somebody?
Maybe.
All right, so there are these widows. So can you tell me more? Is it just the fact that widows in general weren't being taken care of?
Well, I didn't think the ones that were doing maybe the evangelism had time for things like that.
Okay, so that's good. That's another good detail. Who was it that was primarily teaching the word there at the beginning? Who's telling the story? Yeah, the apostles. And so the apostles had gotten caught up in all this work. The widows, there's something else more important. Something we learned out of chapter 6, what's the more important work? But there were some widows that were being neglected, some others weren't, and so that was the reason for selecting these men to be able to take care of it. What about chapter 8? There's a big transition that begins to happen in chapter 8.
Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch, for one.
Okay, so there's a conversion story in chapter 8 of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch.
A lot harder persecution is starting to happen.
Yes, and so it falls out of whatever happened in chapter 7. We'll come back to that maybe a little bit later, get a sense of that story. But once the persecution happens, what happens to the Christians that are there in Jerusalem? What begins to happen to them? Yeah, you got it. They scatter, and they go everywhere, and they're teaching people. And so we begin to have a story that goes beyond just the Jerusalem area and maybe Judea right around it. We get up to Samaria and some other places as the word begins to spread. Great. All right, how about chapter 9? Anything important happened in chapter 9? It might relate to the rest of our New Testament survey class, so to speak. It's the conversion of Saul, who's Paul. And so that's a big deal. And it's not the only chapter where he's converted. We can think about that later on. Not the only chapter where the story of his conversion is. Chapter 15. This is maybe not as easy to think about in events, but I think it's probably perhaps the most important chapter in there as far as some doctrinal matters go. What happens in chapter 15? Go ahead, Blaine.
First question related to doctrine around circumcision, and probably more importantly, the process by which they use to come to the right answer.
Yeah. And so there's some nice discussion about how they recognize what the truth was. There's a lesson to be learned out of that. There's also the fact that the controversy is centered around the Gentiles who have been converted. And from henceforth, it's a very important question. In fact, I'm supposed to do the next class too, and we're going to talk about the book of Galatians and this whole issue about what do you do? What is expected of those that are Gentiles related to the law comes back up again. So that's an important one. And I had one more, Acts 17. There's several different things that happen there. One kind of stands out in my mind, so I thought, well, if I can remember that without even looking, perhaps you can help with chapter 17. What do you know or remember about 17?
I think of Athens.
I think that's me as well. Not as much success there. There are some that are converted at the end of that. But Paul's sermon about God looking after people through all times past, about the one God in contrast to the many gods that were there. Now, there's a number of things in chapter 17 that are useful in understanding the way the gospel went out into the world. And this, well, one of the points that we'll make about a theme in the New Testament is that truth matters. And false teaching is something to be avoided. And I think chapter 17 is a good place for that. I said just real quickly, just again, we're kind of warming up, thinking our way through some of this. What's another chapter? I'm waiting on everybody to pile on chapter 5 there. We've been talking about it beforehand. Anybody got another chapter you know that something happened in kind of memorable in the book? You go ahead. You can have 5.
Oh, I was going to say Christian. 10.
Do what?
I was going to say 10.
Well, okay, good. Acts chapter 10. Vision,
and that the Gentiles would be accepted.
So here we are, the first conversion, right? Who is it?
Cornelius
and his household. That's great. What's another chapter that you can you think of another one you know something from?
The shipwreck is exciting.
Yeah, do you know what chapter it's in?
27/28.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's about the way I would have done it too, Paul. I think it's toward the end of the book. There's the shipwreck. That's a very memorable thing.
And no lives were lost. And Paul said, if you stay with the ship, no lives will be lost. And amazing, that many people on the ship and no lives were lost.
Because they did what?
Well, after 8, you have them picked, then you have Stephen.
Yes.
And 7. No, wait.
Yes, 7.
7.
7.
7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrong. After 6.
I think Jonathan had said that in 8, persecution began and got spread out. But it's the death of Stephen. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think about that as like, once they lost control, that I'm talking about the opposition to Christians, once they kind of lost control of it, now they'll just do anything. And the persecution gets really difficult and all of them. Yeah. But there's this sermon there in 7. Let's take one more, and then we'll try to start to put some pieces together here. Any more? Anybody wants to do chapter 5?
We were whispering about it.
Yes. Yeah, we were talking before about all the children's classes. They've got little sayings. They probably know the 28 chapters much better than
I know.
And they know chapter 5 where they lied and died. You got Ananias and
Sapphira.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got Ananias and Sapphira.
Yeah. Suddenly getting mixed up with somebody else in my mind. I don't want to go in the wrong place here. All right. So there are some things in here. So we're going through. This is, if you have the material, and so I'll just ask you this about the material. I didn't print out anything. If you need me to do that, I will do that. I will try to either send you some, but if you're capable of getting online, finding the material, using it, that's great. If somebody has difficulty with that, just see me after class. We'll figure out a plan to be sure that you get the material and can go through this. This is actually class number 4 But I think the way the material's laid out, it will say less than three. So I try to put both of those up there just to keep from being a little bit too confusing. So you can see we're down to the fourth class, the second Wednesday, and we're going to talk about Acts. And I don't know if I want to say that, and I'll come back to that in the outline in a minute. And then I've got we'll start on Galatians and 1 and 2 Thessalonians, and I'll give you some ideas as to why we're going through this order a little bit later on. We won't worry about that as much right now, okay? All right, so what I thought I would do is to pause for just a moment and think about the nature of doing a New Testament survey class. Last night we were at a little event thing in which some folks were asked to talk about their college experience, and Susan Cottle was there, and she mentioned the fact that until she had gone and had a Bible study class in college, she really never kind of recognized the fact that the Bible is all just one story. It seems to me that's a fundamental thing to understand, because otherwise it's like it's just a group of interesting writings, famous sayings. People have gone, whether they had faith or not, people have gone to the Scriptures for centuries looking for inspiration, looking for consolation. But it's not about that. It's not about having, you know, pithy sayings that are great to have. It's a story from beginning to end. And I would hate to think that we are failing to communicate that here, that our teaching doesn't get across. I think these younger kids in some of those children's classes are hearing that. Whether it's sticking or not, I don't know, but hopefully we're not failing to get that across. A New Testament survey class is meant to reinforce that idea. Now, at times we kind of lose track of it, right? Because we pick up the book of Mark. Here's Mark. Here's what it's like. You know, here's 1 Corinthians. Here's a bunch of things that are in 1 Corinthians. And so we can easily, even tonight, kind of pick up a piece of the puzzle and say, here's Acts, and not see the way that all this is linked together. I think Dustin's done a really good job of trying to show and connect some themes. I'm going to talk about them again tonight. I want to be sure you're able to see the connection of all of that. At the same time, it really is worthwhile to know something about every book. You know, I mean, think about what Dustin has done in the four gospel accounts so far. If you only knew that there were four stories about Jesus, but you didn't have a way of kind of distinguishing them, isn't it nice now to be able to know something different about the way Mark approaches things and the way John does? You know, some of the special stories that are in John that later when you want to go find, oh, that one's in John. Or if I need a quick book, you know, action-packed, moving along, well, that's the book of Mark. I think that's a really valuable thing to have. What I'd like to suggest to you is that what we're trying to do, and I'm going to do this in this New Testament chronology, is think about building a house. At the end of the day, inside of your house, you're going to want to have some really kind of some nice features. You'd like to have a light switch that would turn the lights on and stuff. You'd like to have some nicely painted walls. And you'd like to actually have some walls in between rooms, right? Have some doors. And there are a lot of things you'd like to have. You can't have any of that unless the house has been framed. You got to have framework upon which all of these other things can kind of be hung to or attached to in some way or another. I think that's the purpose of this class. We want to provide a framework that you can kind of see and understand. This is what the New Testament is all about. And now if you begin to understand Galatians chapter 3, you know kind of how, where do you hang that? You know, oh, that's a piece of the foyer that needs to be there. Whatever, however you want to think about it, but the idea that you can find things, it's organized in your mind better. You know where it all fits in. Does that make sense? I think that if we can keep coming back to that thought as we go, help. So here, let's work our way through what I consider be. We're going to do this twice, two different ways. Here's a framework, and let's see where Acts fits inside of this framework. So across the top, what you've got is the timeline of events that are going to take place and be described at some time along the way during the New Testament period. Some of them are easy, right? The birth of Jesus. Oddly enough, though, what should be the year? What are we thinking when we look at the timeline? It ought to be zero. Why is it zero? I don't understand it. It's a quirk of history. When they went back to try to peg a date, they wanted history to start with year zero, but they didn't think about doing that for hundreds of years later. When they went back to do it, they messed up. And you can tell they messed up because you can tell it based on the death of Herod the Great. He really was born around what would have been 4 BC. Doesn't matter to us. That has nothing to do with the Bible or anything else. That's just a quirk of history. So Jesus, if he lived to be at 30, was the beginning of his ministry. He got his baptism. 3 years later, his crucifixion. And then there's some other important events that come along. Most of these events would be found in the book of Acts, where we would actually read about those things happen. Now, some of the things that are up here, we don't. For example, we'll see this in just a minute. We'll see how far Acts goes, and we'll see how some things lie out a little bit beyond it. But here's where the books fit as far as telling the story. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, those are gospel accounts about the life of Jesus. So, of course, where do they end, essentially? Right, at his death and then his resurrection and appearance, and then as he ascends back to heaven, that's the end of that story. But Acts is going to connect this out for a number of years. It's a history book, is what it is. And it's going to go all the way out to where Paul is imprisoned in Rome. We call it the first imprisonment. He refers to being imprisoned in some of the other letters and all. But he will be imprisoned later, but that has to have happened after the book of Acts is over. When Acts ends, he's still alive. And 2 Timothy is talking about, I'm about to die. So some things happen a little bit later on. So Paul's epistles, when did he start writing them? Well, you know, some years into his work before he begins to write them. There's a number of years over which Paul is writing these epistles, and we'll try to link them into the book of Acts. This is one of the, I said there's a framework. This is one of the most valuable things to be able to do, is to see that you can figure out about when 1st and 2nd Thessalonians were written, and see how that connects back to some things that happened in the book of Acts. To me, that reinforces my faith that this is really a solid, reliable account. But it also enlivens the book of those letters. And it makes the history a little more interesting, because you're running across people in chapter 16 or so that you're going to then see Paul write a letter to and talk about his affection and concern and his prayers and things for them. That's a nice connection. And we'll probably, if we have time, we'll look at a couple of passages that connect those together. And then there are some other epistles. Who are the other epistles that have been written by? Other letters in the New Testament? Peter wrote a couple. Jude wrote one. John wrote three. James wrote an epistle, and of course there's the book of Revelation. And it, you know, this is a little bit of bias here. Whoever put the chart together wasn't me. But I tend to agree with this too. But Revelation might have been written earlier, but it could have been written as late as like around 95 or so, as John, his life could have been drawing toward a close. There's some reasons for thinking that. So here are some of those letters. I told you you could connect them. See how they're... These letters are all written during the time period of Acts. And then right there at the end, you've got Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon put together. And they're like right there kind of at the end of what would be where Acts is covering. Why is that? What do we think about those letters? Or what do we think of Paul? There's a prison epistle most likely written during that first imprisonment. And so we got them kind of right there toward the end of the book of Acts. And then there are some other things, though, that he wrote that would have been after he was out of prison. There seems to be that kind of reference in his letter to 1 Timothy, or to Timothy the first time, to Titus. And then, of course, I mentioned to you 2 Timothy, which is right before Paul is going to die. He's in prison again. And then you got some of these other books as well. Galatians, it's not connected to the book of Acts. I can't tell you in the book of Acts a reference that says Paul's writing Galatians. However, Acts 15 sure sounds like a lot of that controversy, what's going on there. But some of these others you can easily connect. And then there are these general epistles. We'll throw those kind of out there as well. All right, so that's a framework. When Acts and the gospel accounts were written is not as important because they're not referencing a time period back to the book of Acts, the same as some of these epistles are. But they were written early on. That's all I think we need to kind of think of. Any thoughts, questions about this? Again, here's a framework. We're thinking this through as we go through this. And then here's one other way of looking at it. This is like a library approach. You're going to go to the library, you're going to go to the stacks, you're going to figure out where are the books. Here's how you can group the books in the New Testament. You've got the gospel accounts, you've got one history, which we're covering tonight, and then the letters of Paul to churches, the letters to individuals, and then we've got these other letters before we get to the book of Revelation. Does anybody know, I think it was in the material that Dustin had covered or some of the things that he had in the first couple of lessons. But I didn't figure this out just a couple of years ago. Or maybe I'd known it at one point, conveniently forgot it, and then felt like I discovered something later on when I found it again. Do you know why the letters are in the order that they're in? Why does it go from Romans to 2 Thessalonians?
Longest.
It's the longest to the shortest. Now, it groups together, like, 1 Thessalonians might be longer than Colossians, I don't know, but I'm sorry. It'll make sure that 1 and 2 Corinthians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians are together. But you're exactly right. And then with the individual letters, same thing. Longest to the shortest. No big deal, but if you're thinking about, well, where is this and all, well, think about, Romans is going to be found before I get to Galatians. Is for that reason. Not because it's chronological in those letters, but just because that was a way of organizing all of that. All right, so we've gone through a couple of frameworks. I want to talk about the themes in the New Testament, but I want to connect them to Acts. So I'd like you to turn to Acts chapter 2. I'm going to do an exercise here in a minute with Acts chapter 2 to kind of help us through it. I think these themes are the most important thing to walk away from this class. When we're done after 13 lessons, if you feel like you have a good sense of what the themes in the New Testament are, I think Dustin, who's going to do most of the class, has done a good job. We'll say that. Because this is an important thing to understand. The first thing we talked about was that God promised the Messiah would come. Now, I'll be honest with you, I worked with Dustin a little bit on these themes, and I was surprised when I got into the first class I came to, and he had put this, not God's Messiah has come, but God promised the Messiah. He's still like looking backwards. But why did he do that? That wasn't what we talked about. But here's the reason why. The New Testament is filled with references about the fact that God said a Messiah was going to come. The New Testament looks back to the Old Testament frequently and pulls things up and talks about it. I want you in a minute, we're going to look to see if we can find something like that in the second chapter of Acts. You can find it all over the New Testament. And Dustin found a number of those in the gospel accounts. God promised the Messiah would come, through whom then God would rescue his people through Christ's death and through the resurrection of Christ. One of the things I'm going to try to do, I think, in the book of Galatians, is take this theme and expand it out a little bit. When you hear the idea that God rescued his people, what comes to mind? What do you think of when you think of being rescued as far as what the New Testament talks about? Okay, which was?
Like rescuing from the Roman rule.
Okay, so there was the idea of being rescued from the rule of other people. You think God accomplished that? Actually, I think he did. in the, not necessarily in the way they thought, but that's one rescue. What are some other ways in which God rescued people?
Yeah, he rescued them from the existing, what the Pharisees thought was the way people should live.
Okay, so a false sense of righteousness, he's rescued from that too. There's some more profound ways of saying this too. That's a good one.
Rescued us from the curse in the garden.
Yeah, from sin and all the consequences of it, of death. You know, that we can have eternal life. All those things are ways in which God rescued. What are some other words that are used for the idea that we've been rescued? We've been what? We've been redeemed. That's one. What else? We've been saved. See, these are words used in all of it. It's all about God rescuing His people. You also got to figure out who are His people? That's another part of that. So I'm saying you have some ways to kind of expand this a little bit. But this is a major theme. God rescues His people. And that serves then, this death and resurrection serves as the basis for God's people being united in work and purpose. And so here's the other thing you're going to, if you're going to study seriously the New Testament, what you're going to run into over and over again is, here is the church that's at Corinth. Well, what's a church? What is that? And it's not quite what we maybe initially think of as being like a grand, big, worldly institution. I'm a little bit... I'm not sure I quite like this idea of calling Acts the history of the church, like it's like some grand institution. There is a sense in which universally God adds everyone to the church. That's the body of all the saved people. But when you start to look at the way the church is presented in the New Testament, it's local bodies of Christians working together. It's the church of God that's here in Corinth. It's the church that's there in Thessalonica. And they are working united with one purpose, helping each other to know God better, to be edified, to be built up, to be worshiping together. And that is a theme that's everywhere in the New Testament. And you can't really separate that from the idea of being rescued and being saved and not think about working alongside of other Christians. That's just a fundamental part of the New Testament. And finally, that God's message has been revealed. Okay, we're supposed to do some things in the book of Acts, though. So look at Acts chapter 2. Let's think about this for a minute. I'll let you help work our way through. Can you find a reference anywhere in this sermon and things that Peter has in which he talks about the fact that God had a plan? He kind of looks back to something that God either had said in the past or a plan that God had. You see a verse anywhere that talks about that. All right. What does it say in verse 17? Okay. And he's going to do it in the last day. He's pointing to some future time, right? And so we would say the New Testament period is these last days. That's what Peter is now presenting. Anything else like this? 30, did you say, Paula? Okay. In 30... it says, here's a prophet. God has sworn with an oath that he would set one of his descendants on his throne. On the throne, that's the Messiah. That's the king. God had said, I'm going to have a king. And so here's a reference to that. These are good. Let me give you one other one. Look at, I believe it's verse
23.
Yeah, thank you. That is exactly it. In fact, I forgot. For some of these... I have one example. I'm hoping you have a, and it's 23. This Jesus, God delivered up according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God. God meant for this to happen. Okay? Now let's think about the second thing, the idea that people are rescued through Jesus' death and resurrection. Is there a reference in this chapter to his being put to death and to his resurrection? Anything in there about that? Right? Yeah, you said 23, Jonathan? Yeah, so you just kind of keep on going here. This, now that he's referenced this Jesus, he goes on to talk about him. He's been delivered up, whom you crucified and killed by the hands of lawless men. Then verse 24, God raised him up, loosing the pangs of death, because it was not possible for him to be held by them. Now later on in the chapter, he'll even connect that death of Christ to what can happen for them. Does he offer to them being rescued and all? Look at this. Look at verse 41, is it? I didn't put this, it's not one of mine, but not verse 41. Yeah, verse 40. He says, save yourselves from this crooked generation. In other words, God is offering to rescue you. Take advantage of it. Save yourself. And those who listened to that responded. Okay, so here are several ones where you could see that. What about the idea that God's people are united in work and purpose? Do you, now that a group of them actually respond to this, do you see them working actively together in any way in this chapter?
42.
Yep, 42 is a good one. In verse 42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers. But keep going. What else does it say after that? It kind of continues the idea that they're together, right? They're spending time together, and they're worshiping God, and they're working together. All right, these are all good. So that, I think I used that one. Here we go. Ah, you don't want to cooperate with me anymore, do you? Okay. Don't look at the last one. All right, and then the last one, the idea that the Word is being revealed. I think you could pull a lot of different ideas out of the chapter there. But what did you find as far as the idea that God's actually revealing a message, a new message? It's a little bit harder, but there's some good things here on this. Oh, well, then clearly y'all didn't see my reference. That's good. I got it out there in time.
30, 22.
I mean,
all right, Rod, go ahead.
22.
What does it say in 22?
Man of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, the man attested to you by God with mighty works and wonders and signs that God did through the human
being. Okay, so here's one thing. Here's Peter pronouncing a message, right? Hear these words. I've got something to tell you. He's going to explain what's already happened. He's explaining something new. That's one thing. How was it that Peter was able to do that? With clarity, with no doubt about it. Think about the beginning part of this chapter. The Holy Spirit comes on. And they're able to convey a message they couldn't have conveyed, in languages even, that they weren't able to do it before. But I was thinking even just about verse 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. What the apostles had to say was something to which they believed they needed to adhere. They needed to follow what the apostles said. And that becomes a theme all through the New Testament. That what's being written is being considered to be Scripture on the same level as whatever the Old Testament Scriptures were. And I'm going to try to show that at some points, not tonight, but in some other classes and all. Okay. So there's our theme. All right, let's go through some things then in the book of Acts. I don't want to do this. If y'all did that exercise, hopefully you got that. I think I want to skip ahead beyond. No, I want to do the outline first, and then I'm going to skip a few ahead. All right, so let's think about this for a minute. Now, here again, this is a framework. We've tried to do a frame work for the whole New Testament. Now let's just narrow it down. What if I was coming to the book of Acts? How would I begin to build my understanding about the book? What's the framework that would help me to understand Acts? Could you divide it in two? Is there any way to kind of just think about, I'll split it in two somewhat. How would you do it, Aaron? Okay, it's got 28 chapters. Would you like to take 14 and just split it that way? Or how would you split it?
The Jews and the Gentiles.
Okay. Jews and Gentiles, that's one way. Anybody else got another way of describing how you might split it in two?
Peter and Paul.
Is that a different way than what Jonathan has said?
Well, Peter does the first, and then Paul does the location.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that most of Peter's work in this is devoted toward the Jews, most of it, but not all of it, but most of it. So that's one way of thinking of it. But the first half of the book is primarily about the Jews, right? Not the first half, but if, I'm just saying, if we divided it too, wherever you divide it up, where does it begin to change from just the Jews? Chapter 10, we talked about that before. But there's still some things after that that are kind of centered around some of the Jews And then all of a sudden, you said, who said Peter and Paul? That was your suggestion?
That was Paul.
Paul's. Okay. So Peter and Paul, then all of a sudden, the key character is no longer really Peter, it's Paul. And the focus is more on the Gentiles than before. Although, does Paul teach Jews?
Yes.
Yes, he does. All right, so that's one way. We can think about that. But let's just try to get a framework. We've got a little bit of an introduction. To me, the most interesting part about the introduction itself is you can take the end of the book of Luke and read almost word for word, to some degree, what then starts off the book of Acts. Why is that? Why can you go to Luke and it's like, man, I just read that a few minutes ago. And now I'm picking back up the thing again.
Same author.
Luke wrote the book of Acts. And because he wrote it, he kind of picks up the story from the Ascension, very much the same. There. One thing, though, I do want you to look at, I know we're doing the outline, but here's the best way to outline the book. Go to chapter 1 of Acts. We're about to have Jesus ascend back up into heaven. Before he does it, he answers a question that those apostles that were there had. And he tells them in verse 8, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. You know what that sounds like? Sounds like the story of the book of Acts. We start off in Jerusalem. We kind of spread out to some areas around Judea. Then we're up in chapter 8. Y'all talked about some things there in 8 in Samaria. And then we begin to go all over the place. And even to the center of the most powerful nation on earth at that time, into the city of Rome. And so that's a little bit of the of a way of picking one verse as an outline of it. The origin of the church, origin of saved people that God puts into the church. But if you have a picture of the church as being something like the Catholic Church, some institution that's established, that will have officers and things that begin to rule over the world in some way, that's not presented in the book of Acts. But the story of saved people who all have been added to God's church is. And so in that sense, I think you could say it's the origin of the church. I kind of like the idea of the origin of saved people beginning to go through here. And then there's this period of transition as we leave Jerusalem and Judea and begin to fulfill Acts chapter 1, verse 8. We go off to Samaria and things that begin to happen there. And then, boy, it just explodes, right? After Cornelius is converted, you go to chapter 11. The picture of the church in Antioch is just great. What a place to have worshipped if you've been part of that particular church and all. But along the way, there are all these stories of persecution that take place. And then beginning with chapter 13 on, we're centering around Paul. And what does Paul frequently do in the book of Acts? What would be your way of, what's your framework, let's say, of how to connect stories about Paul in Acts, beginning with chapter 13?
Journeys,
right? He takes trips, and there are periods of time in which he takes those trips. How many do we think of? Usually three journeys?
Three plus Rome.
But then at the end of that third journey, he comes back to Jerusalem, and we kind of go off in a different direction as he gets arrested and eventually ends up in Rome. So there's the imprisonment and the defense. So that's one way of outlining it. A lot of different ways. But you want to have an outline in some way so that you can just kind of remember how is this flowing? How is the general story kind of going as you go through the book of Acts? All right. So you got some other key facts here, some kind of transition things. The Holy Spirit comes, that allows people to begin to teach the Word. Stephen dies. When he dies, that's when the persecution forces people out, as Jonathan was mentioning earlier in chapter 8. Cornelius is converted. Well, now the Word begins to go off to all of the Gentiles. See these key events that kind of like change things. Things begin to spread out from there. Some other key things that happen along the way, that conference in Acts 15 is now they're trying to deal with the story of these Gentiles being converted. What do we do with them? And then Paul's arrest is another one of those things that kicks off another period. He gets arrested. The story begins to change in different ways as we go through it. All right, so that I think those extra yellow things help to explain why we've moved into something different, a little bit of a transition period there. All right, I'm gonna skip over this. I want to go back to this. We can kind of finish it up as we have a few minutes. Here's one other way. So this is what we were talking about earlier. I just want you to see this in a little bit of a graphic way, time-wise. So you see here on the Ascension and the Pentecost. So Day of Pentecost. There's our beginning point, historically, time-wise, for the book of Acts. It ends when Paul ends up in prison in Rome around 60 A.D. or so. You can tell that early on the story is mostly about Peter. The story is in Jerusalem. Remember how he and John get arrested. How he and John, they heal a lame man. There's several sermons that are told. The apostles are all working together there. And then persecution comes. Everybody gets scattered except for the apostles, which is an interesting thing. But then we had the transition, still a lot about Peter, as we go into the conversion of Cornelius and others, and then into the place here in Samaria. Paul is converted, Acts chapter 9, and then it's like we just drop him for a little bit. You know? It's like he's going to be the main character later, but time-wise, you kind of got to get it in because it happens. And then he's not off doing journeys for a number of years. It's an interesting part of his history, if you will. But then eventually, the story really is mostly about Paul and some of his companions. Such as whom? I shouldn't say it's, Paul is kind of the connecting point, but he's not the only character we talked a lot about. Who else is going to be along with it? Barnabas, early on. Who replaces Barnabas on this travel?
Silas.
Right, Silas does. Some other people that are part of it. Timothy, for example, that we'll be introduced to later on in this. All right? So those are some things I think are kind of important. Now let's go back for just a minute. We got a couple of minutes left. All right, y'all can't see this. All right, let's just try. We've got 3 minutes. Any questions or thoughts that you got? Because otherwise, I just kind of want to take our way through the 28th chapter, see if we can remember one thing out of them. There we go.
Okay. It just dawned on me when he told us to reread Acts, and we missed this. His brothers were there when the Holy Spirit fell on the apostles. You know that James was there and how shaken they all were. So obviously they're going to be believers.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons, but also we know from 1 Corinthians 15, James also had an appearance to him.
Yes,
and
yes.
So these are reasons why those brothers would have come to be believers in him. All right. Chapter 1. Give me one thing. Can you think of one thing in chapter 1? See how far we can go before the bell.
Jesus
ascended. Jesus ascended. Yeah, there we go. Which is actually in Luke chapter 24 as well. Acts 2, I'll just say y'all probably already know. We already did that, right? How about chapter 3? Anything happens in chapter 3? Yeah, there's a lame man and a sermon that follows his healing that's very similar to that. Acts chapter 4. Yeah, there's this arrest that takes place. And so we said there was an early persecution. Haven't said that much about it. But that's what some of the earlier chapters are about. Chapter 5. Yeah, they lied. Ananias and Sapphira. I'll figure out the names that are confusing me with that later. Okay, and then we talked about, yes, that's who it is. It really is.
Yes,
it's Aquila and Priscilla.
It's
like, I know I'm going to get the wrong one here. That would be so embarrassing. All right, so we've already talked about the widows there. And then I think we've talked about chapter 7, Stephen's sermon, right? And then the fact that he dies at the end of that. We've talked about chapter 8, gospel going up to Samaria, the Ethiopian eunuch. This is where it really begins to spread out as people do what they should have done. Once they were persecuted, they begin to teach elsewhere. We mentioned Paul in 9. We mentioned Cornelius in 10. 11 is a repeat. You know, the importance of Cornelius being converted was not like, oh, of course God would have the Gentiles. It's a big deal. And that's why on Sunday, when we talk about Galatians, you'll see it. I think it's one of the most critical things that happened early on was everybody uniting on the idea that there's one body of believers. There's not a Gentile church and a Jewish church or anything like that. But early on it was, should there even be Gentiles as a part of this movement at all? And so that's why not only does it happen in chapter 10 that one of them is converted, but then we kind of got in chapter 11 reinforce the idea that that's God's will. That's what should have happened, and you see that. How about chapter 12? You got anything in 12? Okay. James is killed, so the persecution is getting worse. Let's get to the halfway point, and then we'll stop. Chapter 13. Yeah, so they begin to do the journey that's here, and chapter 14 is part of that as well. Some of the places he went to, some of the places where Timothy is to be found, and some other connections. So, sorry I didn't get through all of it. Hopefully, again, what do you do in a New Testament survey? You can go everywhere. You can do everything. But we're trying to connect the one story and trying to give enough deep framework that you can fit things in later on and feel comfortable in your own personal Bible study. Thank you for your time tonight.